Hello, it's Friday the 11th of June and welcome to Career 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-won. Lee Jun-suk, a 36-year-old who has never been an elected lawmaker, has become the new head of the main opposition People Power Party. We'll have more on this groundbreaking development in our news briefing shortly. It was announced this week that South Korea recorded three straight months of job growth, in a further encouraging sign of economic recovery. We'll take a closer look on Weekly Economy Review later. Plus, on Movie Spotlight, we'll be reviewing the latest Hollywood release to hit cinemas here in Korea, Wrath of Man by director Guy Ritchie, as well as Not Out, another indie hit from the Jeonju Film Festival. We'll have all that and more coming up on today's Career 24. The main opposition People Power Party held their party convention earlier today, Friday, and in an unprecedented result, 36-year-old Lee Jun-suk was announced the winner of the party leadership race. In his victory speech, the newly elected PPP chief emphasized the value of coexistence.
The great mission upon us is to win the presidential election and in the process create a party where various presidential contenders and their supporters can coexist.
For more on this story and the rest of the day's headlines, we have joining us in the studio now KBS World Radio news editor Eunice Kim. Hello, Eunice.
Hello, Jang-ho.
Now, Lee, who has never served as a lawmaker, has defeated four heavyweights in the conservative camp to become the youngest ever head of a major political party in Korea's constitutional history. Not only that, he will now also be tasked with leading the party in unseating the Liberal government in next year's presidential race. So, Eunice, how will this, should we say, atypical leader do it differently?
Yeah, that is the question many will be watching for the answer to as the 36-year-old Lee Jun-suk immediately takes the helm of the country's number two People Power Party, having beat out former floor leaders Na Kyung-won and Chu Ho-young, among others. He is certainly not your typical major political party leader, and it's not just his youth we're talking about, though he has spent a decade or so in political spheres, including a stint as a member of the Conservative Party's Emergency Supreme Council and as an outspoken political commentator. He has, as you noted, yet to serve in an elected legislative post. This is something his rivals had framed as a weakness, but he argued it was his strength, insisting that the old guard of the People Power Party cannot offer a viable alternative to the progressive ruling camp. He won more than 43% of the support in that result, which was announced today. His immediate task then will be to bridge the generational divide as well as reconcile members who had left the devastated Conservative Party back in 2016. You'll remember the Bakune impeachment and those who stayed. In his victory speech, he underlined that the individual characteristics of the party's young and old members will be respected in political harmony ahead of the presidential election in March.
The ideas for change that I bring and the concerned eyes of the traditional party members will be seen by the people as a fierce, warlike struggle for change. And that change will lead us to our victory.
And the reaction to Lee's win has generally been met positively in political spheres, including from the ruling Democratic Party.
Right. The DP chairman, Song Yong-gil, through his spokesperson, expressed hope that the PPP's new young leader will serve to advance the conservatives and bring about change to South Korea's politics in a step away from ideological wrangling for wrangling's sake. Song also proposed a channel whereby rival party leaders can meet and hold discussions regularly. President Moon Jae-in also, prior to departing for the UK for the the G7 on Friday congratulated the new Conservative Party leader, commending Yi for his feat, which he said will go down in political history. Moon called Yi's win a sign of change not only in politics, but also the country as a whole, as he requested the opposition's cooperation and ongoing pandemic response, despite inevitable differences on partisan matters ahead of next year's presidential election.
On that note, let's look at President Moon Jae-in's schedule for the G7. He departed for Britain on Friday to attend the G7 summit, where leaders are set to discuss COVID-19 vaccines and climate change, among other pending issues. Following these summits there, Moon is set to make state visits to Austria and Spain.
Indeed, it's a jam-packed schedule. The G7 will run from Friday through Sunday in Cornwall, the UK, during which the president is slated to attend three expanded sessions on ways to boost cooperation in vaccine supply and in promoting values of open societies, as well as on responding to climate change. And during those sessions, he's expected to share his experiences in regards to the Korean New Deal as well. And on the sidelines, of course, President Moon will hold separate bilats with the leaders of nations, including Britain, Australia, and the European Union. Of course, the one that people will be watching for is one that is not planned, but could happen in an impromptu fashion, perhaps a trilat summit or a bilat with Japan. Now, after wrapping up his stay in Britain, President Moon will continue on to a state visit to Austria from Sunday through Tuesday, followed by a state trip to Spain for 3 days, and I'm sure we'll learn about that more next week.
Let's turn to the country's coronavirus picture now. How did the country do today?
So South Korea reported 556 new COVID-19 cases throughout Thursday, falling below 600 after 2 days. The KDCA said the greater metro area accounted for 72% of the 541 local transmissions. This as the government extended current social distancing measures for another 3 weeks. That's including the ban on gatherings of five or more people, citing lingering virus risks that will remain effective through July 4th. Two more COVID-related deaths have been reported, bringing the death toll to 1,981.
What were some of the reasons the government gave for extending the current guidelines, which have been in place since mid-February.
Right. The health minister, Kwon Deok-chul, cited that the average number of daily cases has remained in the upper 500s over the past 6 weeks, and the virus reproduction rate has hovered around 1 for the past 4 weeks. The minister said the government will ease capacity limits in phases, though, for sporting events, concerts, and other cultural activities against the backdrop of the vaccination program and also ahead of a rollout of a revised distance system in July.
Let's look at some other headlines now. The Bank of Korea Governor Lee Joo-yeol has again hinted at a potential rate hike this year and an orderly exit from the monetary easing policy. Can you tell us more?
So Governor Yi suggested a possible increase in the key rate on Friday in a speech for an event marking the 71st anniversary of the BOK's foundation. The central banker said that if the Korean economy is expected to continue its solid pace of recovery, the bank will normalize the current easing of monetary policy in a quote-unquote orderly manner in an appropriate time. He did note that the local economy is rapidly recovering from the shock of the pandemic and that the recovery is expected to accelerate in the second half. So he strongly hinted at a rate increase, citing snowballing household debt amid aggressive investment with borrowed money in property, stocks, and crypto assets.
Meanwhile, a government report says domestic demand has improved for the second straight month, though concerns over inflation amid a hike in raw material prices remain.
Yeah, this is coming from the finance ministry in its monthly assessment report on Friday. It said exports and investment maintained their solid recovery momentum in May, while domestic demand has continued to improve. Specifically, the consumer sentiment index increased 3 points on month to 105.2, continuing a five-month streak in gains. Consumer prices, meanwhile, grew 2.6% on year in May, the fastest rise in more than 9 years due to high prices of farm and oil products. Credit card usage rose 6.8% on year last month, marking the fourth straight month of gains, while online sales jumped 48.4%.
And finally, the Australian city of Brisbane is one step away from officially being named the host of the 2032 Summer Olympic Games, effectively knocking all other candidates out of the running, including a joint bid from Seoul and Pyongyang.
Yeah, the executive board of the International Olympic Committee, also known as the IOC, unanimously voted on Thursday to support Brisbane's bid, and it cited, among others, as reason, the city's aim to cover 84% of its stadium needs with existing or temporary venues. The final decision will be made when IOC members hold a vote on July 21st in Tokyo, though that is seen as a formality. Brisbane was placed on the fast track to host when it was named the preferred bidder back in February under the IOC's new selection process, which it says is meant to ensure more transparency and efficiency by creating the Future Host Commission, which screens potential hosts and recommends a preferred candidate early on in the process.
That's all for our news briefing. Thank you for those updates, Eunice.
You bet.
We continue on now to our Friday in-depth weekly economy review, taking a closer look at some of the week's economy-related stories. This week, latest data has shown South Korea saw positive job growth for the third straight month in May, with more than 80% of jobs now having been recouped since the pandemic began. Meanwhile, the country's economic growth in the first quarter has turned out to be better than first estimated, and the World Bank has revised up its global growth forecast for the year as well. Analysing these issues for us, we have joining us on the line now economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Professor Yang, hello. It's good to talk to you again.
Happy to be here.
First, as usual, Professor, how did the KOSPI and KOSDAQ perform this week?
Okay, well, for the Korea stock indices, I think there has been ups and downs, but it's mostly about, in the end, very little. I think that's how you can sum up the markets this week. The KOSPI ended today at 3,249.42. It rose up and down throughout the week, but in the end, for this week, it only rose by 0.29%. KOSDAQ, similar story. It ended today at 991.13, but for the week, it only rose by 0.36%. Korean won. It ended today at 1,112.30, and it depreciated by 0.15% over the week.
Okay, so earlier this week, Wednesday, it was reported that South Korea posted positive job growth for the third consecutive month in May. According to Statistics Korea, the number of jobs last month stood at 27.55 million, up by almost 620,000 from a year earlier. It's also the second month in a row the number of jobs grew over 600,000. So, Professor, another good month in job growth. What did you make of the upward trend in employment?
Okay, well, it is a decent number. So it is a optimistic story, though it's probably not as optimistic as the numbers you just cited indicate, because, well, these numbers look at the period 12 months ago, so last May 2020. And if you remember, May 2020 was one of the months when we had these major negative shocks from the coronavirus. So actually, any number that we have from that are comparing this year's number to the last year numbers, I wouldn't trust it until we get to something like July or August. I have been comparing these numbers to May 2019 numbers, so that's 2 years ago. Now, May 29 was not a great year, but it was not an unusually bad year. So I think it makes a fairly good comparison between May 2019 and May 2021. Mm. And if you look at the numbers between those two months, as you said, the total employment this month was 27.55 million. 2 years ago in May, it was 27.3 million. So we're doing slightly better than May 2 years ago, and that's obviously good news. That means that at least for the jobs as a whole, we are at the pre-coronavirus levels. Full-time jobs, that is jobs which have over 36 hours per week, this month, or in May this year, it was 21.14 million versus 22.06 million in May 2019. So we're not quite at the full recovery level, but we're very, very close. And then for workers over 52 hours per week, it's 3.3 million workers for May this year versus 4.3 million for May 2019. So at least people who are working extraordinarily large numbers, there's a lot fewer workers. But we have to remember that back then we still had the 52-hour work week rule didn't go fully into effect. So the numbers, the reduction in numbers probably reflect that regulation more than the coronavirus. For people who we think of as having normal full-time jobs, 36 to 42 hours per week, the numbers last month was 17.80 million, and numbers 2 years ago was 17.76 million. So it's virtually the same. So as I said, it seems to be good numbers, but not as great as the comparison between last year indicates. The employment rate for this May was 61.2% compared to 61.5% 2 years ago. That's because we have slightly more potential workers now rather than 2 years ago, because there has been some slight increase in working age people. But the unemployment rate between 2 years ago and now is the same at 4.0%. Where it does make some crucial difference, I think, is people who are temporarily laid off. There's 422,000 people in this year versus 336,000 people 2 years ago. These people are counted as unemployed in the United States, but not in Korea. These people are counted as employed, but they're not working. So we still need to work through that temporarily laid off people. And the number of discouraged workers, it has been increasing since May 2019. May 2019, it was 538,000 people. In May 2020, understandably, there had been an increase. 578,000 people were scared of looking for jobs because of the coronavirus. But this, but last month, in May of this year, it was 612,000. So this increases in discouraged workers, people who have who are so discouraged that they're not even searching for a job, is turning out to be a more serious problem.
Right. So, Professor, thank you for giving us that comparison, not from last year, but from 2 years ago, because you're saying that is the important comparison, considering all the factors that were in play last year. But even comparing them for 2 years ago, the numbers look overall pretty good, but there are factors to be concerned about. Now, as you mentioned, the job recovery so far compared to last year has been pretty good. The finance minister, Hong Nam-ki, said that more than 80% of jobs has been recouped compared with February last year, just before the COVID-19 pandemic hit the economy. How far away do you think we are from full recovery of jobs?
Okay, well, first, a technical point. February is actually a fairly easy target. I know that Vice Minister Hong picked that month because that was the month right before the coronavirus hit Korea. But if you look at the monthly figures, February figures usually have the most unemployment. So we are comparing February numbers to March to May numbers. That means that we're looking at a month which naturally has high unemployment rate and comparing it to right now. So things may look a bit more optimistic than it should. That's why I compared it to May of 2 years ago rather than February of last year. But having said that, as I mentioned in the last question, the discouraged worker problem seems to be a serious one because it is continuing to grow. And we need to work off the temporarily laid off workers because even though they are counted as employed, they're not really working. Now, these problems may not be entirely due to the coronavirus. It may be because of tougher labor regulations and higher minimum wage problems that we had for the last 2 or 3 years. We have to remember that even before the coronavirus, we had some problems in the labor market because we introduced some labor regulations like a 52-hour workweek rule, as well as a rapid increase in minimum wages, which may have cost a lot of jobs. And also, one concern is that even though we have better or comparable numbers, May compared to 2 years ago, a lot of those jobs are government-supported or government-financed jobs, not particularly high-quality jobs, and targeted toward 20-year-olds and over 60-year-olds. And there's question on whether these jobs will continue if the government support is eliminated, whether it be to budget purposes or whether if there may be a new administration in the future. So we need to work on more structural problems as we get over the coronavirus recession.
Right, some factors to keep watch of. Meanwhile, the Bank of Korea announced on Wednesday its final estimate for the nation's first quarter growth. The economy grew 1.7% for the January to March period, which is a 0.1 percentage point higher than its tentative figure announced in April. So, Professor, even better than first thought, what can we read into this?
Okay, well, I've been taking a look, comparing it between the advanced numbers that we had in April and preliminary numbers, which we got just a couple of days ago. And one of the reasons why the numbers differ is that the advanced figures do not actually use the actual numbers for the last couple of weeks in March because they need the time to calculate. And so they make estimates of the numbers for the final weeks in March. But now we do have those numbers, and there has been some differences in the components of the GDP. Consumption is slightly higher, 1.1 to 1.2. I would normally not mention this because it's too low, but I think any figures which show higher consumption is good news. Construction, the numbers show a huge change. It went from 0.4 in April estimate to 1.3%. That means that toward the end of March, we saw a large increase in construction, which I think is good news. But still, during the time of the coronavirus, when people are doing work at construction yards, it tends to be a bit scary if you're concerned with the spread of coronavirus. Business investment went down from 6.6 to 6.1%, and exports stayed around the same from 1.9 to 2.0% increase. Imports actually went up quite a bit, 2.4 to 2.9. This is somewhat consistent with the higher consumption figures. It does seem to show that people are more interested in spending their money now. That means we'll have a higher chance of a stronger recovery down the line. We'll have to see whether this trend continues.
Yes, and on that note, the global growth forecast for this year got a boost as well. That's from the World Bank. Earlier this week, it revised up its global growth forecast to 5.6% for this year, marking the strongest recovery from a recession since 1940, of course, and that is said to be thanks to US stimulus spending and faster growth in China. But the report said that the rebound is highly uneven amid highly unequal access to COVID-19 vaccines. So, Professor, highly uneven and highly unequal, what's your take on the World Bank's global growth forecast?
Okay, well, I think a lot of analysts have been a bit surprised by how strong the recovery is of the countries which have been experiencing recovery. That's mostly China and the United States. China has gone back to its old growth rate of between 6 to 10%. The United States, the numbers that we see are showing that the recovery is much faster than expected. And that's being attributed basically to the end of distancing, which in turn is attributed to how well the vaccination in these countries are going. If you look at the regional aspect, the United States is expected to have 6.8% growth. Eurozone, if their vaccination goes as planned, estimated to rise by 4.2%, and the East Asian region is thought to be 7.7%, led by China, which is expected to rise by 8.5%. If you exclude China, which does seem to have coronavirus more or less under control, then the growth rate for the region falls to 4.0%, which is lower than the previous World Bank estimate that they made in January. So I think this is what they are afraid of. The recovery will be highly uneven, not only between countries, but within countries as well. I think the export sector will do fairly well because of the higher growth in the United States, Europe, and China. But domestic economies for countries which have not fully vaccinated, well, I don't think we'll recover until next year or even a year after that. And I think that's why the World Bank is emphasizing the unevenness, and it's up to the individual governments to make sure that the vaccination proceeds as quickly as possible so that the growth will be as even as possible, so that everybody gets to participate in the recovery, not just a few lucky sectors.
Right, so much depends on each government's vaccine programs and their rollout. We'll leave it there for this week's Weekly Economy Review. Thank you for that analysis, Professor, and we'll talk again next time.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update.
The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index gained 24.68 points or 0.77% on Friday, closing the week at 3,249.32. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose 3.36 points or 0.34% to close at 991.13. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 5 won against the dollar, ending the session at 1,110.8 won.
You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next up, it's Korea Trending, a daily segment rounding up some of the other popular news stories that people in Korea have been reading online today. Our contributor Bruce Harrison joins us on the line now to bring us those stories. Bruce, hello. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, Jongho, good afternoon and happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you too. So what do you have in store for us today, Bruce?
Well, Jongho, first we're going to learn about how a suspect of an unsolved rape case came to be indicted just a day before the statute of limitations was set to expire. Then we'll find out why some McDonald's stores in Indonesia were forced to close temporarily. And our last story of the day, we're going to discuss a large sinkhole in central Mexico that's getting bigger since it was detected late last month.
Okay, so for our first story, we're looking at a case of which some dramatic details just came to light. Can you tell us more?
That's exactly right. Pretty dramatic, Jongho. It was belatedly discovered that a suspect of an unsolved rape case was indicted just a day before the statute of limitations was set to expire on that case. Now, the Jeju Special Self-Governing Provincial Police Agency said Friday that they indicted a man in his 50s, surnamed Han, back on March 2nd, on charges of breaking and entering, as well as rape. Han was accused of breaking into a house in Jeju in 2001 and sexually assaulting a woman there.
Wow, so this incident took place 20 years ago. Had the police launched an investigation into the case at the time?
They had, Jongho, but they failed to find a suspect because there was no witnesses and no surveillance footage. The only thing they were able to find was a piece of tissue paper with the suspect's semen. The police tried to find a match from their database to DNA on the tissue, but they didn't have any luck. Then in March 2019, the Supreme Prosecutor's Office received a DNA test result showing that Han's DNA matched the DNA on the disposed tissue.
So why the late discovery?
Yeah, good question. So turns out Han was serving an 18-year sentence behind bars from May 2009 for a total of 183 crimes, including 18 other sexual crimes. Now, following the discovery, the Jeju Seogwipo police station had Han transferred to a prison in Jeju. They handed his case over to the prosecution with recommendation to indict. And a day before the statute of limitations on the case was set to expire, the Jeju District Prosecutor's Office finally charged Han with the 2001 rape case.
So they cut it very close indeed. What happens now then, Bruce? When will Han face trial?
Well, he already faced his first trial on April 8th, which he denied the charges. He claimed that somebody planted his semen on that tissue paper that was discovered at the crime scene. Moving forward, his next trial is scheduled to be held next Monday amid the attendance of National Forensic Service officials who analyzed the tissue with the semen, and they're going to provide testimony at that trial.
Right, as we said, this discovery and indictment took place a few months back, but as I mentioned, the details have only come to light now. An extraordinary set of circumstances, and you have to applaud the persistence by the authorities as well in continuing to pursue this case. Mm-hmm. Let's continue on now to our second story. Bruce, what do you have for us?
Well, the BTS meal, our favorite pop group BTS, the meal launched by McDonald's and named after BTS has taken Indonesia by storm, and it's for some stores to close for days because of COVID-19 concerns. According to the Jakarta Post and AFP, 13 outlets temporarily shut down after customers and online food delivery drivers picking up the meal set flocked towards the stores, and this raised fears about the spread of coronavirus. There's so many people, they had to shut down the stores.
This is especially a concern for Indonesia currently, as they've been seeing another surge in infections over the past month. Now, can you tell us more about these BTS meals, Bruce? What is special about them?
Well, it's made up of items that are favored by the group's members. So if you're a super fan, you can pick and choose your favorite. Maybe it's RM, Rap Monster, his favorite meals. The whole set includes 10 chicken nuggets, Cajun and sweet chili sauces, and medium fries and a Coke. That set's currently being sold in South Korea. And according to Hangup McDonald's company, the average daily amount of McNuggets sold in South Korea between May 27th and June 3rd surged a whopping 283% compared to the average daily sales in the four previous weeks, the weeks previous to the launch of the BTS meal set. Worth noting, Jongho, that since burgers and not nuggets are the most popular items, so wow, what a jump.
Sure, I understand these meal sets have caused another frenzy in the resale market. What about that?
That's right as well. There's so much hype about the wrapping items in this meal. It's not your typical burger wrapper or chicken nugget package. The box containing the nuggets, the paper cup for the Coke, even the Cajun sauce of the meal are all purple, which is the official color symbolizing BTS. So these items are being resold online, with many of the buyers being fans in countries where this meal set has yet to launch. This is absolutely outrageous. McDonald's is set to sell the BTS meal throughout this month in some 50 countries. Nobody's ever bought my Big Mac wrapper, Jongho, so this is incredible. Yeah.
Right, so these meals are so popular, they're also causing a potential danger to public health. BTS mania indeed. Let's turn to our final story now. What do you have for us?
Well, a large sinkhole that appeared at a farm in central Mexico late last month has become a real cause for alarm because it keeps growing. According to local media and the Associated Press, the sinkhole at a field in Santa Maria, Zacatepec, in the state of Puebla, now measures over 125 meters in diameter, larger than a football field. Its depth is around 15 to 20 meters and maybe 45 meters at its deepest point.
Yes, I was surprised the story was trending in Korea, but after looking at the pictures of the sinkhole, one can understand why. As you said, bigger than a football field, but I understand it was much smaller originally.
That's right. You know, when it first caught attention, just around 5 meters in diameter, but since then it's continued to grow. The pit has begun swallowing a house nearby, and it's trapped two dogs within its depths as well. According to the Associated Press, the dogs fell in about 4 days ago while playing in the farm field near the hole. Puebla State Governor Miguel Barbosa said the state is mulling ways to rescue the dogs, but added quickly, he will not allow in any situation people to be at risk in an attempt to rescue the dogs.
Do we know what caused the sinkhole to appear and why it's continuously growing?
We don't know the reason yet, Jongho. Some residents believe the sinkhole was formed due to excessive groundwater extraction by factories or a water bottling plant in the area. According to the Associated Press, some experts think the hole was caused by something like an underground river. That report said the water at the bottom of the pool appears to have strong currents. With the hole gaining so much public attention, authorities have had to set up metal barriers and police tape to keep people out. And they've also restricted drone flying above the hole.
Yes, it's quite an extraordinary phenomenon indeed. That's where we leave it for today's Korea Trending. As always, Bruce, thank you for those stories, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Jong-ho.
It's time once again for Movie Spotlight, our Friday feature reviewing the latest releases in Korea. Joining me in the studio this week, first we have film critic Jason Vesheves. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Jango.
And this week we have a new guest joining our critical panel. We have today film columnist Molly Kim joining us in the studio as well.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, hello. We have spoken to you before when we wanted to get your thoughts on Parasite's win at the Oscars.
Why, last year.
Exactly, last year. It's been a while, but it's wonderful to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, to get your thoughts on some new films. Let's start today with a major Hollywood release. It's called Wrath of Man, although in Korea it's called Cash Truck, and it's directed by the British filmmaker Guy Ritchie and stars Jason Statham. Let's look to Jason for this one. Jason, can you set us up for this one?
Yeah, so this is another Hollywood release. A lot of these releases were kind of stuck in a holding pattern, and now they're landing in cinemas in quick succession. So this is, yeah, Guy Ritchie's latest and very familiar territory for him. It's a thriller starring Jason Statham, marking their fourth collaboration. This new feature is a remake of the French film Cash Truck, directed by Nicolas Boucrif. Now, honestly, it's best to go in cold because if you've not watched the original, so I'll keep the synopsis brief. Statham plays a new cash truck driver in L.A. Now, in typical Statham fashion, he thwarts a robbery when his van is surrounded by armed criminals, and then the film kind of flashes back and forth as we learn more about his past and his interest in transporting cash around. Also stars Jeffrey Donovan and Josh Hartnett, quite a small role for him. It was due for release in January, but pushed back.
Yes, unfortunately, the trailer reveals quite a lot of the story. Don't watch the trailers if possible. Now, Molly, as Jason said, this sounds like a genre Guy Ritchie is comfortable working in. For example, his past films, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, The Gentleman, these are all familiar themes. But do you think this film is reflective of his better works, should we say?
I mean, it's a mixture of classic heist genre, which Guy Ritchie is so good at, plus hard action. Mm. But this time, I think the action part has been expanded, probably because of the presence of Jason Statham as a leading man. And I can say this film definitely has a Guy Ritchie stamp on it, but not less. I mean, story-wise, I think it could have been more creative. But the movie selects to be generic, making it a conventional father-taking-revenge type, you know, as many of you have seen in, like, Taken. And yet the heist part spices things up, but then no better than Lock, Stock, and, you know, Smoking Barrels. Mm. So overall, I enjoyed it because I watched it on IMAX.
Oh, wow.
But I can't say it's the best work by Guy Ritchie.
Right, so Molly got the chance to see on IMAX.
Lucky you, Molly, lucky you.
It's been a while for many people, I'm sure.
They had an IMAX premiere for a press conference.
Oh, the Shisawa, okay. Yeah.
So Jason, what did you think of it? Molly was saying there are some bits which are perhaps too generic.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. I mean, it's certainly not a great Guy Ritchie. Then again, Guy Ritchie, you know, what's he made recently that's been really good? Yeah, he had this great start to his career, you know, with Lock, Stock and Snatch. But he, you know, since then, I think he struggled to kind of reach those heights. Mm. But he does make some interesting movies, and this, yeah, it's very.
The Gentleman was really good.
Yeah, Gentleman was actually, yeah, it was quite good. But I still think, like, you know, it was those films in the late 90s that really did kind of make a name for himself, and he's I think struggled to reach that quality ever since. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's formulaic. I mean, it has some of the kind of clunky dialogue you associate with some of these like movies from the 80s and 90s. And we do have these kind of action, or these kind of macho action heroes, you know, the Madong Sok and Liam Neeson and Dwayne Johnson. And it's, you know, they benefited hugely out of those roles. I mean, Dwayne Johnson is now Hollywood's, you know,
go-to action guy.
He's the most bankable star in Hollywood, you know, next to Tom Cruise. And I think Jason Statham as well has benefited hugely out of the Fast and Furious franchise, again using this kind of macho persona.
And so, you know, I was really excited about Josh Arnett. But then,
right, yeah, it's a very small role.
Actually, he does in this movie.
I didn't even know he was in it, and I was like, that looks like Josh Hartnett, but he kind of looks younger, and
he does.
Yeah,
he does.
And also it's not a big role for him, but yeah, he played clearly. I mean, it's a Guy Ritchie film, so I imagine that played a part.
Yeah, Jason Statham has found this action niche for himself, which is surprising for anyone who did see his first film with Guy Ritchie back in the day with Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and that's where he started. So it's quite interesting to see him now cement his place like this.
Yeah, and he's done really well out of it. I mean, clearly he's the leading man in this film, and he is very effective. I imagine especially popular, this film will be especially popular amongst males in, you know, their 20s and 30s. And there's certainly a market for it. And this is not new, of course. You know, we've seen Arnold Schwarzenegger, was it Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know, those
Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
I mean,
those actors started off as big action heroes.
Yeah, it's nothing new. It's just these films are more polished and, they get bigger and more expensive. But ultimately, the formula is very much the same.
Molly, as we mentioned, this film was originally meant to come out in January, but then it's only coming out now. And we're seeing more and more Hollywood blockbusters hitting screens again. But with the pandemic, the situation will be different in other regions. And even here, there are still distance seating measures in place. Would you say this is a film worth seeing on the big screen like you did, especially on IMAX? Mm-hmm. Or should we wait until it's available at home?
I'm a theater lover, no matter what. So I'm just going to say yes, watching theater. Anyway, but like I said, I loved the experience watching it on IMAX theater. This movie wasn't really, you know, specifically made for IMAX format, but it was more than expected, you know, very satisfying viewing. I highly recommend you watch it on the big screen. This movie better functions for the action part than the story part. Especially the last shootout sequence is quite a spectacle.
The visuals are pretty good. Yeah, there's no denying that. And Guy Ritchie is a very experienced director, so you expect that from him.
Well, the film is called Wrath of Man, or Cash Truck in Korean, and it's the latest by Guy Ritchie. The next film we're looking at is a local feature. It's called Not Out, and the title is the same in Korean as well. It's written and directed by a new director, Lee Jung-kwon, and it originally premiered at the Jeonju Film Festival in May. Molly, can you introduce us to this film?
Yes. This was actually released last week, but since there are not many new films this week, we are talking about this independent film now. And it's Lee Jung-kwon's feature debut, and he participated in many independent films as an assistant director for Bohiwa Nogyang, which is my favorite. That came out last year. And as scripter and writer and many other roles. And he's made a couple of shorts, including The Distance Between Us. And that was like 5 years ago, I think, and was invited to the Busan Film Festival. He graduated from CAFA, or the Korean Academy of Film Arts. And in terms of this film, Not Out, it is one mad work, almost. He produced, wrote, and directed. And I'm not really keen to baseball games, so I didn't know what not out means, you know. The dictionary says not dismissed, with innings uncompleted, not out. Still not clear what it means, but I think it's a metaphor that indicates, you know, the protagonist situation. And this film follows Kwang Ho, who wants to play professional baseball, having been part of his high school team, but faces a series of setbacks. He ends up selling illegal gasoline with his friend Min Chul. And the main actor, Jung Jae-kwang, won Best Actor at the Jeonju Film Festival, which he shared with Kong Seung-yeon with Aloners. And the film also awarded CGV Arthouse Award, Creative Support, and also Watch Us Pick. It's also been warmly embraced by local critics in much the same way as other chief title Aloners.
Mm.
Right, so the film's title, Not Out, as you mentioned, is a reference to baseball, of course, and baseball is very popular in Korea, as many of our listeners might know. Jason, does this film delve into the world of baseball, or is it really not about the sport?
It is and it's not. Certainly, it looks at some of its problems in terms of, you know, young baseball players being able to get the opportunity to play professional baseball without having to worry about their social class or corruption. Mm. And so it's kind of, you could kind of differentiate this film from a film like Fourth Place, which looks at the competitive nature of sports. So this kind of looks at the issues surrounding social class, which I like quite a lot. And it looks at the central character and how he resorts to crime in order to be able to get the money he needs to be able to basically bribe his coach. Well, I say bribe, but it's in order to get an opportunity to play a professional baseball, or at least get into university. And so, yeah, I like the film a lot. I think it's really well shot. And I think the leading actor for me was also really quite impressive, Jong Jae-kwang. And I noticed that he's starring in, or he's going to star in quite a few films. I think he's in the Bom Dae-doshi sequel, The Outlaws. Mm. And yeah, he impressed me. I love the cinematography. It was shot by a guy called Kim Yong-guk, and he worked as on the cinematography team on a number of films, including Inside Men. Mm. And the final shot of the film is absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And so I was like, who is the cinematographer? it's well directed. I mean, it's in terms of its structure, it's very conventional but it's very disciplined, and it works quite effectively. I was impressed. I mean, I've only seen two of the Jeonju films so far, because I wasn't able to get down to Jeonju this year. But the two films I have seen, this one and Aloners, they're very good. I'm very impressed.
You only saw the good ones and the most popular ones.
That's true.
I love the film too. Especially the main character, it's portrayed in such a candid and powerful way.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like the fact that this film depicts the hierarchy among the, you know, among young players and how it suffocates them. Mm. I think the director did a lot of research on this kind of world. I mean, like sports world, you know, where competition is embedded into their everyday life.
Yeah, no, it's a good film. I highly recommend it.
It seems to me that many of the films made outside of the studio system, independent films, tend to focus on young people in Korea, sometimes children, teenagers, or in their 20s and 30s, the struggles they go through. Why do you think that is, Jason, and what do you think it says about the directors making these films as well?
I think the directors, I call them like the 80s generation. And this filmmaker, I think, was born in 1989. They enter the industry in a completely different... I mean, the industry is very, very different compared to the kind of predecessors. You know, the generation of the 1960s, you know, Park Chan-wook, Bong Joon-ho, Kim Ji-yoon, they entered the industry in the 1990s, whereas now these younger filmmakers are having to enter... If they want to make their feature debut, they either have to work within the studio system and not have any creative control, or make an independent film. And the films that they make invariably tackle the themes facing their generation, young people. But it's interesting. You've got like Yoon Go-eun, who's focusing on children, and then you have filmmakers like Kim Bo-ra that made a film about a student and difficulties she had going through high school or middle school, and then you have other movies that will focus on kind of young adults, like Aloners that I spoke about. That we talked about a couple of weeks ago, it's really interesting, and I think it reflects the society they live in.
Sure. And Molly, what do you think about the fact that these filmmakers, young filmmakers, are tackling these issues specifically?
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about in terms of independent cinema, even like 20, 30 years ago, it used to be there used to be a lot of older directors, but now we have more younger directors. Directors are getting younger and younger every year, and it's their subject, you know, the issues they are dealing with everyday basis. So we'll naturally get to see those kinds of subjects.
And it seems like the film Not Out is a good example of this sort of film. It's out now in Korea. That is where we'll leave it for Movie Spotlight this week. Jason, Molly, it's been a pleasure to have you both here with us today. Thank you, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
And that wraps things up for the week here on Korea 24. As ever, we'll be back on Monday, so we do hope you join us again then to get your daily dose of Korean news and analysis. Till then, we hope you have a great weekend. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you, as always, for listening. Goodbye.